Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
For me, when I think of Juneteenth, part of what I think about is both the both-handedness of it, that it is this moment in which we mourn the fact that freedom was kept from hundreds of thousands of enslaved people for years and for months after it had been attained by them. And then at the same time, celebrating the end of one of the most egregious things that this country has ever done.
Today, a Democracy Now! Special to mark Juneteenth, the federal holiday commemorating June 19, 1865, when enslaved people in Galveston, Texas, learned of their freedom more than 2 years after President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. We'll speak to Clint Smith, author of How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. Then, to the pioneering musical artist Rhiannon Giddens, who won a Pulitzer Prize for her opera Omar, about Omar ibn Said, a Muslim scholar in Africa who was sold into slavery in the 1800s.
It's just so amazing that Omar's story has been is being lifted by this opera, being lifted by the existence of this work, and more people are knowing about him. Because the whole point for me was to complicate the American, they represent the American story.
Rhiannon Giddens was a founding member of the Grammy-winning black string band, the Carolina Chocolate Drops. Her banjo playing can also be heard on Beyoncé's hit single, Texas Hold'em. All that and more.
And sorry about that, folks. That's not the right episode. That's the one coming up for the special day on Wednesday. We're going to bring you today's episode right away here. We don't want you to miss out on all the news from today. So this is today's episode, and sorry for the mix-up.
In the United States, the Juneteenth commemoration dates back to the last days of the Civil War, when Union soldiers landed in Galveston, Texas. It was June 19, 1865, with news that the war had ended and enslaved people learned they were freed. It was 2.5 years after President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. In 2021, President Biden signed legislation to make Juneteenth the first new federal holiday since Dr. Martin Luther King. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Eid is today, but the warplanes haven't stopped all night. What Eid? In all the Arab countries, people are celebrating Eid and enjoying it in their countries, and they're having a good time. But what about us? Where is our Eid? At war? In destruction?
The Israeli military announces a daytime tactical pause in its attacks on Rafah to allow humanitarian aid to enter the Strip after systematically blocking aid from reaching Palestinians in Gaza for 8 months. But UNRWA says that nothing has changed. We'll go to Rafah for an update from UNICEF spokesperson James Elder. Then former President Trump hits the campaign trail after visiting top Republicans at the Capitol for the first time since January 6th.
First day in office, we're going to close up the border. First day in office, we're going to drill, baby, drill.
We'll get response from Democratic Congress member Jamie Raskin, who served on the select committee to investigate the January 6th attack and calls Trump's meetings with Republican leaders a scandal and a disgrace. And acclaimed author Arundhati Roy could soon face trial under India's contested anti-terror laws after Prime Minister Narendra Modi's far-right ruling BJP party gave the go-ahead for her prosecution.
India's constitution has effectively been set aside. The Indian Penal Code is being rewritten. If the current regime wins a majority in 2024, It is very likely we will see a new constitution.
The charges against Arundhati Roy stem from comments she made about Kashmir in 2010. But supporters say this is an attack on free speech. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations warning more than 50,000 Palestinian children in Gaza require immediate medical treatment for acute malnutrition. In a statement, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees said the situation in Gaza is catastrophic as residents continue to face desperate levels of hunger. Muslims across the world today are marking the holy day of Eid al-Adha, but it is a day of mourning in Gaza, where the death toll from Israel's war has topped 37,300.
How are we supposed to be happy on Eid while every day there are martyrs, wounded people every minute, every second? There are no houses. This area used to be the best area in Khan Yunis. Now it's all destruction and rubble. Now our biggest dream is to live in a house. There are no houses and no life. Life has been diminished.
A new investigation by the Associated Press has revealed at least 60 Palestinian families have lost 25 or more family members in Israel's ongoing war. In some cases, entire bloodlines of families have been killed. AP highlights the story of Yusuf Salem. 173 of his relatives were killed in Israeli airstrikes in December. About 100 more members of his family have died since then. Yusuf Salem told the AP, quote, "My uncles were wiped out totally. The heads of households, their wives, children and grandchildren," unquote. In more news from Gaza, aid shipments are no longer coming in by sea to Gaza. The U.S. military's temporarily removed the pier it just built due to rough seas at the cost of over $300 million, the building of that pier. This comes just over a week after the pier was reattached, after the first pier was damaged in a storm. Meanwhile, on Sunday, Israel announced it would pause attacks along an aid route in southern Gaza during daylight hours. But the head of UNRWA says operationally nothing's changed in southern Gaza. Israel's announcement came a day after fighters from Hamas killed 8 Israeli soldiers in Rafah in an ambush. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has dissolved Israel's war cabinet following the recent resignation of former military chief Benny Gantz. This comes as mass protests continue in Israel, calling for the government to support a ceasefire and hostage deal and for new elections. Tens of thousands of people protested in Tel Aviv Saturday. Several groups have vowed to intensify their protests by launching what they call a week of resistance. Here in the United States, Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna of California has announced he'll join other lawmakers and boycott Netanyahu's upcoming speech to Congress. The Biden administration's placed sanctions on a far-right Israeli group that's been attacking Gaza-bound humanitarian aid trucks in the West Bank. In May, members of the group Tzav 9 set fire to 2 aid trucks and looted the aid aboard the trucks. In other news from the occupied West Bank, Norway's foreign minister has warned the Palestinian Authority could collapse in the coming months due to a lack of funding. In a 6-3 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court has struck down a ban on bump stocks, accessories that turn semi-automatic rifles like the AR-15 into fully automatic machine guns. The Trump administration issued the ban in 2018 after a gunman opened fire at a concert in Las Vegas, killing 58 people in one of the country's deadliest mass shootings ever. In the majority opinion, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote, quote, "We hold that a semi-automatic rifle equipped with a bump stock is not a machine gun because it cannot fire more than one shot by a single function of the trigger," unquote. The court's 3 liberal judges dissented. Justice Sonia Sotomayor summarized her dissent from the bench, saying, quote, "The majority puts machine guns back in civilian hands. When I see a bird that walks like a duck, swims like a duck, quacks like a duck, I call that bird a duck," she said. Survivors of the 2017 Las Vegas massacre decried the Supreme Court decision.
Going to let our children continue to die. You know, that's my biggest push, is that as an adult, I am stuck with this trauma and this fear for the rest of my life. My children should not have to live this way. You know, we don't have to live this way, and we don't have to die this way.
In related news, a gunman in Rochester Hills, Michigan, opened fire at a splash pad on Saturday afternoon. 9 people were injured, including 2 children and a pregnant woman. The victims ranged in age from 4 to 78. A semi-automatic handgun was found at the scene. The suspected gunman was later found dead from an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. The shooting occurred in the same county as the 2021 mass shooting at Oxford High School that left 4 students dead. More than 90 countries participate in a 2-day conference in Switzerland to discuss ways to end Russia's war in Ukraine, but Russia wasn't invited to attend the talks. Most of the countries attending signed a joint communique stating the, quote, territorial integrity of Ukraine must be the basis of any peace deal. Ahead of the talks, Russian President Vladimir Putin put forward his own ceasefire proposal that involved Ukraine dropping its ambitions to join NATO and to hand over areas of Ukraine claimed by Moscow. Speaking in Switzerland, Vice President Kamala Harris criticized Putin's offer.
And let nothing about the end of this war be decided without Ukraine. By contrast, however, yesterday, Putin put forward a proposal. But we must speak truth. He is not calling for negotiations. He is calling for surrender.
The UN is imploring the international community to pay more attention to the unfolding humanitarian catastrophe in Sudan, where the war that broke out last April has killed at least 14,000 people, uprooted over 10 million, could result in millions of famine-related deaths. Humanitarian groups project 750,000 people could face catastrophic food shortages by September, while some analysts say the death toll could end up in the millions. This comes amidst ongoing deadly battles in El Fasher, as the rapid support forces try to seize the last city in Darfur outside its control. Over 220 people have been killed in recent fighting. Last week, the UN Security Council passed a resolution calling on the RSF to immediately halt its attack on El Fasher. In France, leftist parties announced a new alliance ahead of snap elections later this month. French President Emmanuel Macron called the surprise June 30th vote after suffering a major defeat to the far-right national rally at the EU elections. Leaders of the newly formed New Popular Front joined mass protests against the rise of the far right in Paris Saturday, vowing a complete break with Macron's policies.
Popular mobilization is the key to fight against the extreme right and to beat the extreme right. We say regularly that the European elections mark the after Macron period.
The United States is driving a global surge in spending on nuclear weapons. The International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons reports global spending on nukes jumped 13% to over $91 billion last year. The United States spent over $51 billion modernizing its nuclear arsenal. That's more money than all of the other nuclear nations spent last year combined. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has been reelected for a second term after his African National Congress managed to put together South Africa's first coalition government. The coalition includes the Democratic Alliance, the ANC's longtime rival. The ANC suffered a major defeat in the recent election when it lost its majority in parliament for the first time since the end of apartheid 30 years ago. Reuters has revealed the U.S. military ran a secret anti-vaccination campaign during the pandemic in the Philippines and other nations in an effort to sow doubt about COVID vaccines made by China. The Pentagon campaign began in 2020 under Donald Trump and continued into mid-2021 after Joe Biden took office. The Pentagon set up numerous fake social media accounts on multiple platforms to target audiences in the Philippines, Central Asia, and the Middle East. The campaign also aimed to discredit masks and test kits made in China. One military officer involved in the campaign told Reuters, quote, "We weren't looking at this from a public health perspective. We were looking at how we could drag China through the mud," they said. A judge in Missouri has overturned the conviction of a woman who spent 43 years in prison for a murder she did not commit. 63-year-old Sandra Hem is believed to have been jailed longer than any other woman who was wrongfully convicted in the United States. She was convicted of killing a librarian in 1980 solely based on self-incriminating statements she made to police at a time when she was a patient at a psychiatric hospital where she was being treated for auditory hallucinations and drug use. Evidence has since emerged showing the actual murderer was a police officer who has since died. The governor of Maryland is planning today to pardon 175,000 marijuana convictions. The sweeping move by Governor Wes Moore is expected to help about 100,000 people who were arrested on low-level drug charges. In an interview with The Washington Post, Governor Moore said, quote, "I'm ecstatic that we have a real opportunity with what I'm signing to right a lot of historical wrongs," unquote. Governor Moore said he timed pardons for the week of Juneteenth, the federal holiday on June 19th to mark the end of slavery in the United States. The U.S. Surgeon General is calling on Congress to require social media platforms to include warnings stating that their apps can cause, quote, significant mental health harms for adolescents, unquote. In an op-ed for The New York Times, Dr. Vivek Murthy from tobacco studies show that warning labels can increase awareness and change behavior. Climate activists in Europe are denouncing G7 leaders for not doing more to address the climate emergency. During the recent summit in Italy, G7 leaders committed to accelerating the transition away from fossil fuels. Activists with the group Extinction Rebellion chained themselves together in Bari, Italy.
We call for this voice to be heard, that of the animals that are disappearing, of the biodiversity that is dying, and also of the people who are living in the front line of the eco-climate crisis. Because international forums such as the G7 are not taking concrete action. Instead, they're going in the opposite direction. Even though international institutes such as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change or the International Energy Agency have repeatedly said that a transition is possible, even while respecting the rights of people and workers, G7 countries continue to invest in fossil gas, like Italy, in oil, like the U.S., in coal, like Japan or France and Germany.
And the University of Minnesota has announced it'll launch a new search for the new next director of its Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies after rescinding its offer to noted historian Professor Roz Siegel. The center revoked its job offer to Siegel, who is an Israeli Jew, after two members of its advisory board resigned to protest his hiring. Who has called Israel's war on Gaza, quote, a textbook case of genocide. Hundreds of professors have signed a letter condemning the university's decision. You can see our interview with Professor Siegel at democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Gaza, where the United Nations and other organizations are issuing ever dire warnings as Israel's assault stretches into its ninth month. The head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, warned last week, quote, a significant proportion of Gaza's population is now facing catastrophic hunger and famine-like conditions. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says over 50,000 children now require immediate medical treatment for acute malnutrition. Medical workers are struggling to treat sick and malnourished patients and Israel's destruction of Gaza's health infrastructure and water supply. On Sunday, the Israeli military announced a daytime tactical pause in its attacks on Rafah to allow humanitarian aid to enter the Strip. But the head of UNRWA says operationally nothing has changed in southern Gaza. Israel has been systematically blocking aid from reaching Palestinians in Gaza for the last 8 months. Israeli forces have also targeted Palestinians seeking the scarce aid and have killed more aid workers than any war since the UN was formed. Israeli forces have also killed Palestinians as they attempt to bring food home to their families, including last Wednesday, when troops fired at a group of fishermen in Gaza, killing two of them. That attack was witnessed by our next guest, UNICEF spokesperson James Elder, who's joining us now from Rafah. Before we get to that larger issue, can you describe what you saw? What happened to these fishermen, James Elder?
Amy, we're on a mission to take, life-saving medical and nutritional supplies for UNICEF to 10,000 children in the north. We've gone through all the processes. It's very complicated. It's detailed. We've seen far, far too much aid denied and restricted for people who are in such desperate growing need. It's about a 25-mile journey from where we were, Derry-Bulla, to the north, to Gaza City. Amy, it took us 13 hours, 8 hours of those were near checkpoints. In the end, there was a who said, she said on our truck was enclosed. They thought it was a van. We waited. In the end, it was denied that access, those supplies to those 10,000 children. As we waited, Amy, ironically, I'd been talking to a colleague about the fishing industry, about, you know, this destruction of education, of healthcare, of housing, of agriculture. This colleague friend of mine explained how his father-in-law had a fishing business, and he showed me videos of when his fishing business, the boats, when they just went up in flames, when they were bombed or missiled, boats, wood, and of course, fuel. And he showed me this. He explained his father-in-law had a stroke at this time. So I was engrossed watching these fishermen. This was just 8 or 10 men in knee-deep water, in the ocean or in the sea, with a single net each. And I was looking at each time thinking, you're probably a university professor, you're maybe an engineer. Watching for hours and hours whilst we waited to get our aid. Suddenly there was a tank. This was very near the Israeli large military checkpoint. There was gunfire. Next thing, two of the fishermen just up on the beach were on the sand. Now, I was luckily with other colleagues, World Health Organization, a paramedic. They immediately rang to the authorities to get us permission, those people with emergency medical experience, get us permission to get onto the beach to see the state of these two fishermen. That was denied. That access was denied. Half an hour later, the other fishermen, just so desperate to get to see their friends, their family, I'm not sure, in the air, we gave them body bags. They went, they brought them back, and that's where I saw that one fisherman had been shot in the back and one fisherman still with the fishing net around his ankle had been shot in the neck.
So if you can put this into a bigger context, James Elder, if you can talk about what's happening right now, the scale of the catastrophe that is Gaza right now when it comes to hunger and famine, not to mention the killing of Palestinians, where what right now the number is over 37,000 killed, well over 15,000 children, probably the number much higher because we don't know how many people are dead under the rubble.
Well, as you say, Amy, look at that number of children. I don't know what number. My executive director, I think, captured it very well to the Security Council many months ago, saying that the killing of children in Gaza and the destruction of Gaza cannot possibly bring peace to the Middle East. We are now at this terrifying time where it seems like it's being normalized. There is nothing normal about another night here where the bombardments are relentless, the drones are relentless. You do not sleep. Okay, obviously children get bombed as well, but there is the psychological torment of that. That's ongoing. Just before we started, I heard more fire here, more bombardments. That will be relentless. So 250 days, Amy, children have gone through this. The physical and psychological exhaustion they face is, yes, almost impossible to capture. Because on top of that, you have a nutritional crisis like the Gaza Strip has never seen before. And that's why we're trying to deliver aid to the north. You have a water desperation that we have not seen here. That normally 15 litres of water is a bare minimum per person, Amy, a bare minimum. That's to clean, to drink, to wash. We're down to a couple of litres of water. It's the middle of summer here. It's sweltering heat. I looked at a thermometer in a tent the other day. It was 55 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is. It's way above 100 Fahrenheit. Yes, people in Gaza are used to the summer. They're used to summer in their own homes with a cross breeze, with ceiling fans. Now they are in tents, side by side, sweltering on the sand. So that lack of water and lack of food is not just playing into disease on those most vulnerable being children. It's also now we just have sheer risk of dehydration. So From the skies, it is relentless. I was at a hospital just a couple of hours ago before speaking with you, European hospital. Within a moment, I see Hala, 4 years old. She's blind in one eye after the family home was struck. Wahid has lost his arm and his leg after he was asleep and he woke up in rubble. And Yassim has lost his right arm. This is within a minute of seeing it. There are, I don't know what it is now. I got numbers when I was here in November, Amy, 1,000 children with amputations. I don't know the number now. We should stop these numbers. We have to focus on that human story. But, of course, the scale is unprecedented and as hard as it is to produce. And, of course, people ask, is it worse now? Of course it's worse. It's worse every day. It can't not be. Today it will be a bombardment. Today will be more people without food and water. Tomorrow will be worse. It will continue to get worse until those with the power of the pen, those looking over this ceasefire, start to understand and start to care about the level of suffering that children and their families are enduring here.
You mentioned 55 degrees Celsius when you looked at the thermometer. That's actually 131 degrees Fahrenheit. We're talking to James Elder, UNICEF spokesperson, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. He is joining us from Rafah, Gaza. You just said that you continue to hear explosions outside. So can you talk about what this tactical pause is that the Israeli military surprisingly announced kind of out of the blue on Sunday? What exactly it means? It says around one emergency aid route in Rafah?
Yes. Look, any restriction in bombing, any pause in the bombing is good news for children. There are most nights here, they are almost sleepless nights, whether it's the bombing or whether it's the drones. The bombing is like, if it's close, I thought I knew, Amy, what bombing sounded like. I had no idea. When it's really close, it's like someone banging pots next to your head. A drone is a lawnmower and it's relentless. There are attack drones and there are surveillance drones, and there's more fire now. So any restriction in bombing, any pause, whatever you want to call it, is good news for children. But we have to wait and see what this will actually mean. This is a small portion of getting aid in through one part of the Gaza Strip. Now, to facilitate aid is good, but a much bigger picture than that, the responsibility of Israel as the occupying power is to enable aid to be distributed safely on the Gaza Strip. That's not happening. Chaos is being sown because there is such high levels of desperation, because there is such a lack of security. As you said rightly, Amy, there, more United Nations colleagues haven't been killed in this war than at any time since the advent of the United Nations. So whether this will mean smoother, faster, safer aid operations, we hope so. But what will really for that to truly happen would be more crossings opening, many more crossings opening. We've been speaking about that, the Secretary General of the United Nations, for months and months and months. That's one part of it. The second part is, of course, we go back to a ceasefire. Ceasefire is flooding the Gaza Strip with aid, getting hostages home. Ceasefire would get hostages home, and a ceasefire would enable us to start to address the nutritional crisis. For example, Amy, UNICEF was treating 3,000 children with the most dangerous form of malnutrition here in Rafah. And then we had the military offensive in Rafah that we all begged not to happen but somehow feared would. That quote-unquote limited offensive that led to a million people being displaced, it also meant that our stabilisation centre there, treating 3,000 children, was inoperable in a minute. Children getting treatment are suddenly, and they're gone. Now we have to try and go back into those communities, back into these tented hell holes, to find these children, to find those families, because without that treatment, they will die. And Rafah Crossing, which was the lifeline, Rafah Crossing was the lifeline for humanitarian aid, has been closed for more than a month now. So there's such a constant war of words here, but we just need to look at evidence. Evidence is that humanitarian trucks coming in May was half that of April. Evidence is there's a fraction of routes open that should be. Land crossings are the most efficient and cost-effective way to get aid in. Evidence is that the pier is no longer functioning. Evidence is that we are catapulting, if you will, into a nutritional crisis. And the evidence is that as we try to deliver aid and as children try to be safe, bombardments continue.
You have talked about what's happening in Gaza as a war on children. Earlier this month, UN added Israel to its so-called list of shame, a blacklist of nations and groups that violate the rights of children in armed conflicts. Other nations on the UN list of shame are Russia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Somalia, Syria, Burma, Afghanistan, Haiti. UN also adding Hamas and Islamic Jihad to that list.